Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Lift Heavy Run Long exclusive podcast, episode number 4 with Brandon Morrison of Lift Big, Eat Big. I'm your host, Wilson Horrell. Some of you know me as Beefcake. I want to thank you for supporting Lift Heavy Run Long and becoming a member. The members only area of LHRL is for you, and I want your input and would like and what I want to hear what you would like to see happen. And if you have any suggestions on who you'd like to see on the show, feel free to reach out and let me know. The Members Only podcast is uncensored, so I want you to be aware if you have children in the room or the vehicle. I do my best to censor the Lift Heavy Run Long podcast that is available to the public, as I have children and I like to listen to podcasts with them in the car, so I want to respect you and your family as well. However, the Members Only podcast will probably be a little bit more raw, so whatever gets said on here will not be edited. Our guest today, I have Valerie Hunt on the line, who is with Lift Heavy Run Long and also of RunRx.fit. Most of you probably know her. How are you, Valerie?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for taking the time to be on the call. I know that you've been awful busy with programs and getting things in line for Lift Heavy Run Long and the members of that. Thank you.
A lot of fun.
And we have our guest is Brandon Morrison of Lift Big, Eat Big. How are you, Brandon?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on here. I came across your name from a mutual friend of ours, Amanda Drogmiller. And
right.
she told me, she said, you gotta get with this guy. He's an eccentric, high-energy guy. He's got great programming. She's doing your programming right now and getting really strong and looking really well. And so I reached out to you, and I'm excited to hear about how you got your start with Lift Big, Eat Big, and some of the things you've done to grow this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down to talk about it. I'm glad she mentioned my name. She's been doing Pump Dragon now for, I think, almost 3 months, and it's a good example of someone in a CrossFit gym being able to do eccentric programming and getting good results from it. So I'm all about eccentricity.
Well, tell me a little bit about Brandon Morrison and what you were like growing up.
All right. Well, I was born in Washington. I lived there for about 4 years. I moved to a very small town in Idaho in the mountains, like less than 2,000 people. And I was homeschooled until I was about 16. And I moved back to Washington. I remember it was the month of Y2K, so December of 99. That was my big time splitter in my life. And I have three brothers. We're all about a year apart. Very, not necessarily athletically competitive, but, you know, fighting over food, fighting over very minor things. Eating dinner so quick you don't taste it, just fast enough to get the last piece of leftover. So that is shaped, I think, a lot of the way I act is the way I was taught in school and the way I grew up with my brothers. So about halfway through the 2000s, we were on a swim team for about 6.5 years. So I was a, I don't know if you know who Ichabod Crane is, but I was Ichabod Crane until I was about 22 and 165 pounds, long distance swimmer. And I just remember looking at very large, strong men from the 70s. And, you know, I'm very tall, 6'5". And I thought, you know, I want to look like that. I don't want to turn to the side and not find myself in a mirror if I'm standing behind a small tree or something. So I decided to put on a lot of size there. It was, for the first 2 years, it was not great size. I did a gallon of milk a day for almost a year and a half. So I gained 122 pounds in 2 years, and that was about 6.5 years ago. So the remaining 4 years, I've stayed around that weight and I've just been recomping it as I go on. I don't really want to weigh 300 anymore. I kind of wanted to weigh that just to say I weighed 300, but I started to realize that is, it's not like a lift. You don't want to weigh 300 just for the hell of it.
A gallon of milk every day. Was that your only real diet change?
Well, I mean, I just ate everything all the time, and I drank that on top of what I ate. So
almighty.
There's a lot of calories in it. They're pretty good macros. It is a bit high in fat. I would not recommend that. As I've gone on, I used to be all about it. So I'm not about that anymore. It's a quick way to gain weight, but it's going to be a bit dirty weight. And it would probably be better to gain weight a little more slowly instead of gaining it really quickly and then spending the time after losing the fat that you've built on top of the muscle.
So you go from a pretty lean guy to you start to bulk up and you start to get strong. And then when does eat big, lift big come into the picture?
So I was working at a marketing job, and this was about a year after I started CrossFit. So I've worked a lot of various jobs. This one was at a marketing firm, and there was just not enough work to fill the day. I was still getting paid the same amount, but I had to make up work. And I noticed I was getting into a lot of Facebook arguments with people and text arguments, and just realized I should put this into writing instead of just ranting into, you know, dead Facebook air. So I bought the Lift Big Eat Big domain back when it was Blogspot, which I don't miss at all. And I just started writing articles. I've always been someone who wants the absolute truth of something. I got a degree in theology and religious studies, and I was very, very Christian until I got that degree. And I started to realize, I wonder what else I was taught that is fact, that is actually not fact. So I wanted to make a website that focused on fact-based research, evidence-based research, instead of, you know, someone saying, well, all the evidence says this is not true, but it works for me, so therefore I'm going to recommend it to everyone. And that's always been a big focus of my site, is what does the research say? And I think that it's made me a lot of, not necessarily enemies. Well, I mean, people have said that they're going to burn the shirts they bought of mine when I post something that they don't agree with, but yeah. And it's like, well, you
which is okay shirt, as so long as they buy another shirt or
you're lost. But, I want to continue to post articles that talk about actual research on any topic. I'm not just limited to lifting and eating, like the name implies, but, I want to stay research-based, a little controversial because, you know, the fitness world is very dogmatic in terms of what causes obesity, how to get strong, sitting makes you as unhealthy as a smoker, things like that. So I want to get to the bottom of what is the truth there and what is the difference between the truth and someone trying to sell a product that's supposed to cure a problem that doesn't actually exist. So that's a big focus of my site.
So you go from arguing on Facebook to deciding to start put this out in a blog content, and I'm assuming?
Yeah. I've always enjoyed writing. I almost enjoy writing more than talking, and I love talking. But I like being able to take my thoughts, which can be a bit jumbled. Like she said, I'm a little eccentric. Take those thoughts, put them into writing using as few words as possible while still getting the point across and making reference points for people to share with their friends later if they're trying to win an argument or something online in the future. So, yeah, I wanted to get my thoughts out of my mind onto paper or onto a computer as quickly as I got them.
There's something very therapeutic about that. Somebody like me who has a lot of, like you said, jumbled thoughts, there's something to be said for, at least in one area of my life, getting things on paper and for, at the very minimum, a moment, having some clarity.
Yeah, it's like shedding weight in your mind when you can get those thoughts out and see them compiled in a way that's easily read and can make sense instead of, you know, in your mind, jumping from the conclusion to the opening statement, to the middle of the article and back and forth. Just having it written out in a structured way can help you talk about it better in the future.
Do you thrive?
I like that aspect of it too.
Do you thrive on the argument?
It depends on who I'm arguing with. There's a lot of research that says, especially with people that, you know, don't think vaccines work, things like that, the more you show them evidence, the more they're going to retreat into that way of thinking that you're trying to talk them out of. And if someone doesn't trust research, showing them research is not going to convince them. So there's certain arguments I just don't get involved in. There are some things in lifting that don't have research to back them up, just because no one's going to fund a study on, you know, the best way to curl your pinky towards your bicep for a bicep curl. So you kind of have to go off of experience and things that have worked for other clients, and you throw that in there when you talk about it. But I do like arguing a bit. There's a good time to call it and just realize that it's deteriorating into name calling and everything. But I would say, yes, I do thrive on argument.
Well, I could see somebody that's as knowledge driven as you are enjoying having the opponent, the opposing thought, and then that driving you to learn more about what it is that you're arguing about. Somebody like me is exactly the kind of knucklehead that you're talking about that you're not going to get anywhere with, because once I decide it's an argument, then it becomes more about winning than it does become about learning anything. And I see right. A lot of that on Facebook, and I try to be as passive as possible, partially just because I don't know a whole lot about any one thing, and second, because I act like such a child when I get upset or somebody doesn't see things my way.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I will argue with people, not for the sake of convincing them, but either to have other people read what I've written and make them go, maybe I should check out that resource, or just make them go, wow, that guy he's arguing with is insane. Maybe he's not as right as he thinks, but I do think some arguments will make you smarter. You know, I might be wrong, and I would rather be right in the future than cling to a wrong way of thinking just so I don't admit that I was wrong about something. But I do think arguing makes you, for some people, it makes you want to be smarter, because one of the benefits of the online argument is you can take a little time before your response, maybe look up some data to see if what you're saying actually holds water, and if not, get out while you're behind instead of digging yourself deeper.
Yeah. Well, you have a great deal of followers. When did you realize that this was something that you could do that was going to be successful?
Well, in the beginning, you know, I didn't think I could monetize it. I didn't think people would pay me for coaching. I thought, oh my gosh, no one's going to pay me $25 a month to coach them. And, you know, I was wrong about that. Now it's $150 and people are signing up faster than they were with $25. I think there's something to be said for knowing your worth and people knowing that you know your worth. You know, I would not hire someone who charged $25 a month, because I would think, what am I getting for that? Do they not know what they're talking about? Because if they did, they should probably charge a little more. But I think the first time I realized I could turn it into a living was I just made a t-shirt, and the t-shirt sold really well. So I made more shirts and started making just merchandise to fund the side of the site that's free, which is all the videos and articles and tutorials and everything, because it's nice to teach people, but if you can't eat, you know, you can't do it for very long. And I'm not of the mind that I can do a site like this and have a different job. I just can't split my focus like that. I would either end up slacking on one or the other. So I needed this to be my full-time job, and it is now. It's been a full-time job for 6 years.
Do you do the nutrition as well as the weightlifting?
Yeah, I do meal planning. I do coaching. I write training manuals like the one Amanda's doing. But my meal plans are a little bit different. It's not chicken and brown rice and broccoli. And if you see the meals I post online, even if someone's trying to lose 100 pounds, they'll still eat like that. The portions are just reduced. So I've found that when people are eating food they like, they're a lot more likely to stay on the wagon than convincing themselves they can eat like a bodybuilder who's about to go on stage. it would just be better for long term if you can have a diet that is sustainable. I don't think eating the same thing every day is sustainable for most people. And most of the weight loss clients who've come to me, that is why they've come to me, is because they try to do a Weight Watchers thing or some generic, bodybuilding diet that most bodybuilders don't even follow until they're trying to get leaned up for the stage. So I think that would be my main approach, is making a diet for people that is sustainable long-term instead of a short-term fix to lose 10 pounds.
Do you do a lot of self-experimentation?
I do. Most of the things I post, especially on Instagram, are me saying, I wonder what happens if I do this. So especially with the training, the past 3 years, I spent a lot of time trying to come up with exercise variations for people to do in CrossFit gyms who don't have some of the machines, or any of the machines really, that are in a chain gym. Because I just realized over time, you can't do sets of five or sets of three and work on everything you need to. You can't just back squat if you want to get better at back squat. If you have a weak leg, one leg that's weaker than the other, that leg will get stronger if you're doing bilateral work, but it's still going to be weaker than the other because the other is compensating for it. So a lot of the stuff that I do is experimenting with ways to work around a lack of equipment.
Is there a style of training that you, a school of training, I guess would be the term I'm looking for, that you stick with more than anything, whether it be, CrossFit or, bodybuilding, strongman?
I don't really do CrossFit anymore. I don't do it at all. Too heavy. I don't like when my back gets really sweaty, and my back sweats a lot in CrossFit, so I stopped doing that. Something with the back hair. It just is not a good feeling under my shirt. I just don't like, I hate a sweaty lower back. Oh my God. Hate it. But I would say it's a combination of strongman, powerlifting, and a lot of bodybuilding work. The first 4 years of the site, I did 13 strongman shows, 3 powerlifting shows. And that was my main focus. And I just started to realize it's a very fun thing to do, but if I want to keep my body healthy enough to be able to run the site for a long time, not have, possible bicep tears or hospital visits from a sport that's not going to make me any money, and there will be nothing there for me at the end of the road if something bad happens, I wanted to switch to more of a strength and size / longevity type of training for myself.
What about running? You do any of that?
Only if I'm late. So not really. I don't really like impact cardio for myself. I do have congenital knock knees. They angle in from the hips, and I tend to really favor the inside of my foot just because, before I started lifting, my knees were just, it looks like they were magnetically attached to each other. So that's always been a little concern of mine. Again, with the back sweat, just not a fan of that. But I guess my version of cardio would be short, heavy movements, like carrying a sandbag and running with it at top speed for a minute. Or I do like the Airdyne when I get to use it. Or just high volume training with very minimal rest periods. I used to hike a lot with my family, like up Mount Rainier, the biggest, I don't know if it's the biggest mountain on the West Coast, but it's pretty big. It's 14,500 feet. And when I was lighter, I would train a lot for that with a lot of cycling. Cycled to school about 22 miles a day. Half of that was uphill. But since I've gotten heavier, cardio is not really my focus anymore.
Is there anything that as this has evolved, what do you see today that 5 years ago you would have argued was incorrect? What is the biggest misconceptions, the biggest lessons that you've learned doing this?
Well, when I started the site, I was not really a macro believer. I didn't know as much about nutrition as I thought I did. You know, I thought there were things like empty calories or sugar is cancerous. And that thinking has really evolved over time once I started reading actual research instead of anecdotes or hyperbole charged articles about people that are quoting, not necessarily research, they're quoting, you know, documentaries that have a heavy bias. And that's the thing with documentaries is anyone can make a documentary about anything. There's documentaries about the earth being flat. And when people start quoting things like that, you know, I used to do that myself. Watch a documentary, they make an argument, yeah. You go, I guess that makes sense. And then you repeat it as fact. You're kind of spreading the dumb around. So I think my approach to nutrition has changed the most, as well as realizing you don't have to just lift heavy to get stronger. Because that's kind of what I was taught, especially following some of the 70s guys, the 80s lifters, is you have to lift heavy all the time. High rep stuff is a waste of time. And I've noticed since I stopped doing that I've never felt better in my body or been bigger since I started adding a lot more hypertrophy and bodybuilding movements in. And it's fixed some of my, like the knee problem I was telling you about. Heavy lifting never fixed that. It was the adductor machine at a chain gym where you push your knees out. That made the biggest difference. And that was a big jump off moment for my mind to realize that, you know, you can't just do three sets of five, three sets of three pull-ups and strict press and then expect to work everything. So really focusing on isolation movements was a huge wake-up call for me. And I based my two most recent training manuals around that. And those have been far and away my best sellers and have gotten the best feedback and results from the people that have bought them so far.
Are you a pretty regimented guy?
I would say for the most part, I really like structure. I get anxiety if I don't wake up before 5 a.m. I feel like I've wasted the day already. In the gym, I have a little more leeway because I have to find a nice happy medium between training for myself and training to make video content or training to come up with new exercises for clients because I only have limited time in the gym. So I try to make the most of my training while still trying to make things to make the site better or film demos for clients or come up with new exercises for a new training manual. I'm working on a specific shoulder training manual right now to supplement people's CrossFit training. That's 2 days a week with equipment that they have in the CrossFit gym. So that is part of my focus right this minute.
Do you have your own gym or is there someplace that you work out?
You know, when I started, I really wanted my own gym. But just talking with owners, I started to realize that would probably not be a great idea because I feel like some people open a gym because they think they are going to work out all the time. But really, it just turns into more of a clerical job than anything. And, you know, changing toilet paper, printing, you know, athlete sign-in forms, dealing with the toilet being clogged, stuff like that seems to be more par for the course of owning a gym than actually training. So I've been fortunate enough to be able to rent space from some good CrossFit gyms and let me store my equipment in there. Let me film some weird stuff, and I can get out of there in 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, I've heard it said before that the best way, the quickest way to lose your fitness is to open a gym.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, I spent 17 years as a gym owner. That you have to live it full time for sure.
Yeah, and hopefully, as far as I've heard, hopefully break even for the first few years.
Right.
Yeah. So that is not for me. That would be another full-time job on top of what I think is two full-time jobs. So that is good for some people. It's not good for me.
We talked about that a little bit last night on the podcast that we recorded. And I remember telling my dad, you know, having the epiphany at age, you know, whatever, 22, that I wanted to open a bar. And he's like, every drunk wants to open a bar. You know, you watch enough episodes of Cheers, and it's great. You know, who doesn't want to go to a place where everybody knows your name and everybody's happy to see you? And, you know, but then when it comes to, like you said, cleaning up throw up off the floor and broken bottles and, you know, changing out toilet paper, nobody wants to do that. And I can, yeah. I have my own business, and I have for 15 years, and there's all those things that I know that I'm supposed to do that come with running a business. And I also know what it feels like to say, you know, I just don't want to mess with those things today.
Right. And with, you know, a business like mine, when you stop working, the business stops working. I don't have employees. All the content I make is, you know, come up usually by myself, usually about 5 or 10 minutes before I write it or post it or film it or something. So if I take a day or two off, there is not really money being made on those days. So you don't really have a choice but to work as a self-employed person. And I feel like that would be the same. If you opened a gym, I've seen a lot of gyms tank just because the owner lost their fire for it. And that sucks for everyone who is coaching there. It sucks for the people being coached. When you're paying 150 or 200 bucks a month, even if those are, you know, 20 workouts a month, you should still get something good for that. And when you lose your desire for it, everybody suffers, and you're going to suffer big time if you go bankrupt or something. So I would strongly suggest people do not open a gym until they've at least helped manage one, possibly, especially because the market, CrossFit market, gym market in general, is so completely oversaturated now. When I started, there was like 2 or 3 sites like mine. And now there's, you know, donuts and deadlifts and caffeine and kilos and just deadlifts and dog shits. There's so many brands that are doing the same thing that if you don't have something special to set yourself apart, you can't just write articles on why, you know, why you need to hydrate, the importance of 8 hours of sleep, stuff like that. You need something that makes you stand out to people. And I've, you know, it was tough growing up like this, but I've learned how to use it to better my business. Just being weird helps. You know, I have the Fit Girl thing. I've got the, you know, Mountain Man survival videos. I've got the cooking posts and videos. You have to make yourself stand out. So if you're just trying to go with the generic, you know, X and X strength and conditioning, and you don't necessarily have something to offer besides that, unless you're, you know, a very, very good coach, I don't think you will make it. And equating being a really good athlete with being a good coach is not the same thing. I know some very, very good athletes that couldn't explain how to do a lift. You know, they just say, "We'll just pick it up." Oh, cool. I never thought about that. So figuring out if you want to be a good athlete and or being a good coach is a good thing to consider before opening a gym, because not every good athlete is a coach and vice versa.
Tell me about your content. How do you come up with all this stuff? You say that you usually come up with it 5 minutes before. Do you, when something crosses your mind, do you just act on it?
Yeah, I mean, I have notepads all over the house. Just write a couple of words if I get an idea. Just words to remind me of what I was thinking about. It's both a benefit and a drawback. I am not great at long-term planning. So it's good that I'm very spontaneous with things and I'm constantly coming up with ideas. But on days where I have a funk, not a whole lot of content being made that day. So a lot of the lifting content ideas that I come up with are usually based on questions from people, clients that I'm working with in person, you know, physically in the same room as them, where they don't know how to overcome something. And I wonder if this is a common problem with other people, or more often than not, it's just annoyances that I have with things that I need to put my rants down on paper so I can stop thinking about it, because that stuff just eats me up.
Was it a process for you to get comfortable enough with yourself to do the kind of videos that you put out?
Yes, definitely. 2 years ago, I never talked on camera online. I made my first cooking video, which was eggnog in July. I love eggnog. and it was the middle of summer, and I wanted to make it, and I was driving back from the store, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to film this and see how it goes, and it was all right. I stuttered a lot. I always worry about stuttering. I think it's, I don't know what the word is for that. It's an ungrounded fear I have. But I started talking in those. I started making outdoor survival videos, and it got the attention of Discovery Channel. So I was on a show on Discovery Channel where I got my absolute shit pushed in on this. It was like a 18-day race through the jungle. It was pitched as a survival show, so that's all I trained. And I get there, and they say, oh, it's a race now. And I was against 130, 150-pound obstacle course racers or marathon runners. So I really only trained survival stuff. And I was there for about a week. After the editing, it looked like I left on day one because they cut it from 10 episodes down to 4. So, I mean, it's still, you know, if people ever give me crap about that, I just ask how they did on their Discovery Channel TV show.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
So... But no, it was a good experience, and I think talking on camera was one of the biggest recent changes for me to make the business better, because I try to speak a little differently than how I look. I know I give off the impression of just another bald, bearded meathead, but I try to speak a little more eloquently. I know I've sworn 3 times on this podcast. I try to never swear on video if I can help it, but you said it's uncensored, so...
Here no, you're good. Absolutely.
Maybe it was 4 times. I think it was 3 times. 3 swear words. Sorry, Mom.
I think it's important to do things that make you feel uncomfortable. And I feel like I spend most of my time these days is spent doing things that I either don't know how to do them, but I'm interested in them, or they're things that make me uncomfortable. I try to write every day, and writing really scares me. I have a brother who graduated in journalism, and a mom who at one point was a senior English teacher, and I'm just kind of a, you know, always thought of myself as a, you know, dumbass aspiring meathead. And so writing has always really scared me. So I think that doing that every day and forcing myself to do that every day, especially at the beginning of the day, I feel very accomplished, and I feel very... I don't know what the term I'm looking for, very fulfilled for having faced that and gotten that out of the way first thing.
And how about vindicated?
Vindicated. And I don't know that I'll ever get over that fear, and I don't know that I ever really want to, because there is an adrenaline that comes with hitting the publish button. And I guess right. I'm curious if, do you still get nervous before every video, or is that something that's gone away?
Oh, no, I definitely get nervous, and, you know, I try to think of all things in terms of, if I'm afraid of this and I don't do it, will I ever not be afraid of it? You know, like in training, if you aren't good at something and you don't do it, you will always be bad at it. So I do try to think of things in terms of, you know, for like a video game skill unlock or something. If I never... do this skill in a video game, I will always be bad at this aspect of it. So if I'm afraid of talking on a video or just being really weird and wondering if people are going to think I'm stupid for it, at this point, it almost makes me want to do it more. So yeah, like you said, there is a adrenaline rush with the publish button or posting the video and getting it all edited. And I think that's kind of the reward response we're looking for when we do those things. But, you know, I do get a little butthurt if I spend a lot of time on something. I get a lot butthurt if I spend a lot of time on a video or an article and it's like three likes. Oh, cool, man.
Oh, I'm with you totally.
Because that's literally how you gauge if something was successful, is if it gets the response from the public. You know, we're operating in our upstairs rooms or offices or something. We're not talking in front of physical crowds. So if someone came to a speaking event and there's 3 people in the crowd and 2 of them are hobos that wandered in to use the bathroom, you're going to go, am I wasting my time with this? So, yeah, there's definitely a little butthurt going on. And it's usually the things, ironically, that I spend the most time on. usually if there's a heavily researched article that I spent, you know, a week or two writing and editing, and I put it out there, those always get the lowest response because it takes actual thinking to read it. They do work well as reference points where people go, you know, on some Facebook argument that I'm not a part of, they will link my article as evidence, which is sourced in at the end of the article. But it's usually the articles that are passion-based, you know, this is a rant about this, or this is what makes me mad. It appeals to people's catharsism, and that usually gets a better response. The stuff that I spend like 5 minutes writing while I'm eating spaghetti. Like my most popular article, it's got like over 1.5 million views. I wrote it while I was eating a Cuban sandwich, and I wrote it on my phone, 10 reasons why heavy lifting is terrible for women. I mean, I literally spent 5 minutes on it, and that was one of the articles that, you know, kind of catapulted me into the fitness world more than any other. So there's almost a little resentment when the things you work so hard on don't get the response that you think, you know, you tell yourself that they deserve because you know it's good. And you don't always, at least I don't always know if what I'm doing is quality. But there are some things where you know for a fact it's quality. And I feel like if you can be someone that can judge the work you do, instead of just saying everything is good because I made it, I'm a good judge because it's me, I feel like that means something if you're able to critique yourself. And I did put up a video last year where I critiqued my own coaching skills. I think it's really good to be able to critique yourself because, you know, if you think you're great at everything, nobody is. So if you think you have no flaws, that is a flaw in itself. So I'm always trying to analyze, if I think this way about somebody, do I actually think this way about them, or have I convinced myself this is how they are, and I'm just feeding off my own opinion of them or anything really?
I'm 100% accurate of being inaccurate of all of my, every time I put out content and I think, wow, this is about to be it. This is some quality stuff. Like I'm really proud of this. I can't wait to take a shower. And by the time I get out of the shower, like my phone won't even be able to handle all of the traffic that's about to come through it. And then I come out and I'm like, it must not have published. Like there must have been a problem because nobody's saying anything about it.
There's one like from your grandma.
Yeah.
And some guy that's like a bot account. You know, like RussianRingtonesForYou.com.
Check out my page. And then, you know, there's other things where I just, you know, sit down and I'm like in a hurry and I'm trying to like change my socks at the same time as you know, move my laptop around. And I hit the button and then it's like, wow, like where'd this come from? So, yeah. You know, I guess it's just hard to tell what's going to hit home with people.
Yeah. I mean, one big thing that's changed it is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, putting in their algorithms. You know, I have 110,000 Facebook followers. If I don't buy like a $30 ad, you know, 2,000 of them will see it. That's less than 2%.
Yeah, right.
So I don't focus on the number of followers anymore, especially on Facebook. You will go in debt if you're trying to show it to all your fans. And when the content is not something that makes money, if it's an article, not just an article that I wrote, but an article that I literally paid someone, you know, $75 to write, there's $75 gone there. There's $20 to boost the post.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like people being smart. I want people to be smarter, to be more critical. I also have to, you know, buy ice cream. So I have to find a balance between trying to make people smarter, trying to help people be smarter with themselves, and, you know, paying bills. So like you said earlier with people, you know, trolling maybe, this is very petty, but I do enjoy this. When someone is very critical of the site, and I can't believe I take the time to do this, but when someone is very critical of the site, I look through all the receipts I've ever had, and I look for their name. And if they never bought anything from me, I don't care about their opinion, because if you did support the site, you would have a little more meaningful input for me. But if you've never bought a t-shirt, you've been, like people say, oh, I've been a fan for 4 or 5 years. That's great. That means you've been benefiting for 4 or 5 years off of articles and videos and tutorials that you've never put anything back into. So goodbye. I did make a pie chart where it shows 110,000 fans and it's all orange. And then there's one sliver that's blue and it's one fan. So when someone says I'm leaving the page, I just post that little pie chart.
Yeah.
To show that I do like being a little bit petty sometimes just because it makes me laugh. If you're leaving anyway, who cares?
Well, I told you I wouldn't keep you too terribly long, but I do want to ask you, I like to ask guests on the show, what is their bliss? And when I say bliss, I mean, if time and money weren't factors, what would you want to do with your life? And are you doing that now?
Oh, boy. I would absolutely love to be a Civil War historian or on an archaeological dig in the, you know, sites that were from the ancient Near East, Jerusalem, Palestine, Syria, stuff like that. That is my absolute passion.
That was a pretty detailed and quick and unique response.
Yeah, I mean, I'm covered in ancient Near Eastern tattoos, Civil War tattoos. I live for history. I'm reading a book right now on archaeological evidence for Israel and Judea in the Iron Age and Late Bronze Age. So I'm getting stoked. Like, as it gets close to bedtime, I start to get really stoked because I know I'm about to go to bed and read that until I fall asleep. And I was just sitting in bed last night for about 10 minutes with my eyes closed, smiling, just thinking about the history of the Fertile Crescent. So that is absolutely my biggest passion. It just doesn't make money, so I can't focus on that.
That's interesting. Well, Brandon, I appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast. If people want to find you, where do they go to do that?
So it's Lift Big Eat Big on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, and website. I'm working on the new shoulder training manual coming out. Pump Dragon 1 and 2 are out right now. It's 8 weeks for size and strength with, you know, a couple thousand reps a day with movements you can do with very standard CrossFit equipment. They're both $30. They have video tutorials for all the movements. There's about 80 to 90 videos per training manual, so you don't have to Google things. You can see the exact way I'm talking about doing them. And, watch out for a cookbook I'm trying to work on over the next few months.
Good stuff. Well, man, it's nice talking to you, and I hope to keep in touch with you, and I look forward to what you put out in the future.
Well, thank you both for having me.
Thanks, Brandon. Thanks, Valerie. We'll talk soon.
Bye.